Welcome to another episode of Quest Youth Radio, Quest Community Vibration. Good evening and welcome again. Lyrics, like poetry, have a message. History, like a diamond, shines clear to the truth. Words have meanings that we can all comprehend, like definition. News creates a chain of events that we can we don't always understand. Now, just pull back the curtain and see the real contributions of our diaspora, and you will find our Quest moment where we attempt to make waves. Thank you again for joining us, and without any further ado, I'd like to introduce our student host. Just 1 second, and we'll have him on the line. Good evening, Walt.
Good evening, Mr. Bay, and I would like to welcome everybody to another edition of Quest Community Vibration. And to start off the show today, I will be doing a curtains, which is an exposure and analysis of artists and the work behind the curtain of the stage. Many recording artists and companies have grown rich from the support of the community, but what benefits has the community gained from the artists? Curtains is a review of their musical growth and history, the impact of their particular style and genius on their general moods and attitudes of their listening audience, lyrical and musical social conscious as presented by the artist over a period of time between CD release. Curtains serves as an introduction to and an exploration of a particular artist, his or her genius, and their involvement in influencing all people, style, and creativity in the world today. The curtain I will be doing today, and also Diamond right after, will be Zora Neale Hurston. And see, I have a excerpt from one of her little short books titled How It Feels to Be a Colored Me by Zora Neale Hurston. And I will read a small excerpt out of that. I remember the very day that I became colored. Up to my 13th year, I lived in the little Negro town of Eatonville, Florida. It is exclusively a colored town. The only white people I knew passed through the town going to or coming from Orlando. The native whites rode dusty horses. The northern tourists chugged down the sandy village road in automobiles. The town knew the southerners and knew stopped cane chewing when they passed by. But the northerners were something else again. They were peered at cautiously from behind curtains by the timid. The more venturesome would come out on the porch and watch them go past and go just as much pleasure out of the tourists as the tourists got out of the village. My front porch might have seemed a darling place for the rest of the town, but it was a gallery seat for me. My favorite place was atop the gate's post. Not only did I enjoy the show, but I didn't mind the actors knowing that I liked it. I usually spoke to them in passing. I waved to them and returned my salute. I would say something like this: "Do well. I thank you. Where are you going?" Usually, automobile or horse paused at this, and after a queer exchange of compliments, I would probably, in quotes, go a piece of the way with them, as we say in farthest Florida. If one of my family happened to come to the front in time to see me, of course negotiations would be rudely broken off. But even so, it is clear that I was the first, in quotes again, welcome to our state, Floridian. And I hope the Miami Chamber of Commerce will please take notice. And in that little small excerpt that I just read to you, it basically is an introduction into the life of Zora Neale Hurston in her particular work, which was actually writing, being a writer, a very visual writer and poet as well, writing numerous books throughout her career. And I want to go straight into the diamond so I could bring this connection together. And the definition of diamonds is, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply and you are bound to find yourself. Now, Zora was a bright little girl with a mischievous spirit. Her father warned that her curiosity would get her in trouble, that the white folks wouldn't stand for it. But her mother told her to jump at the sun, and that is what Zora did. Zora was born in Eatonville, a self-governing black town in Florida. She loved to listen to stories on the back porch of the general store where people in her town gathered. It was there that Zora developed a love for language and folktales. Zora was a writer, but she also studied and collected folktales. She celebrated with lives of black people in her novels and folktale collections. She followed her mother's advice. Zora was never afraid to express her feelings or live the way she wanted to live. Writers admire her unique gift of telling stories in the wonderful style that captures everyday life. One of her most popular novels is Their Eyes Were Watching God. Now, to bring this connection together and see how Zora Neale Hurston became the successful writer that she is today, you see how she originally got the idea and curiosity gained from just watching people pass by. She describes it as a show for her, and she has a front row seat to the gallery, and watching what people do with their lives is and also asking a lot of questions and being curious and not being afraid to ask those questions. Really helped her curiosity, really, as her mom said, jump at the sun. And this is what creates a lot of good writers, as you can see in history. They have different moments or different periods of their life where they're able to visualize, they're able to analyze what goes on, and they're able to create that into a masterpiece, a writing. And Just the different experiences that she's been faced with and the visual representation that she has in her life as a child, being curious, always analyzing things, visualizing things that happens in her life, made her a visionary, made her a very, very successful writer. Thank you.
You know, I want to, you did answer the question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Really, what motivated you to select her as a feature for this evening?
Of course. And again, I want to bring people always, like I say every week, people that's probably not as talked about, as mentioned in today's society. Zora Neale Hurston, of course, is a very successful woman in the field, but you hear more people like Langston Hughes a lot, but you don't hear too much about a person like Zora Neale Hurston, whose upbringing and way of writing and technique of writing really, really is unique and really is what creates a lot of good writers, of her being able to visualize and being able to create what she sees and what she does in a daily basis into writing. And that's really what really is what very interesting about Zora Neale Hurston and how she goes about her life. And
Yeah, well, I'm certain there's more that we can find out about her. But, we urge, our audience to go out and find out more. You know, like, she was a filmmaker and an anthropologist. Very interesting to look further to find out more information. What else do you have on tap for us to do?
Yes, and for today, I would like to, before I go into my definition, I would like to go into the second diamond of today, which will be Fannie Lou Hamer. And see, Fannie Lou Hamer had been a cotton sharecropper all her life. She began to pick cotton at the age of 6. So tending the cotton fields was all she trained to do. Day after day, with her husband and their 2 children, she worked the very same plantation on which she was raised until August 31st, 1962. On that day, Fannie Lou Hamer walked into the registration office in Indianola, Mississippi, and demanded that she would be allowed to register to vote. On that day, Fannie Lou Hamer was no longer a humble sharecropper. Fannie Lou Hamer had become a civil rights activist. Because she tried to register, she and her family were forced to leave their homes on the plantation that very evening. They went to a friend's house, and 10 days later, 16 bullets were fired into that house. Despite the violence that was a reaction of her courageous act, once Fannie had decided to take control of her own life, nothing would stop her. She was sick and tired of being sick and tired. Again, this is in quotes, sick and tired of being sick and tired. And she was going to change things. She joined groups of civil rights activists and quickly became a leader who organized an aggressive strategy to change Mississippi's racist political system. In 1964, Fannie co-founded the Council of Federated Organizations, which recruited Northern white students to protest the treatment of African Americans in the South. She helped set up the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party to challenge the white-ruled regular Democratic Party and secured more equal representation of blacks in Mississippi politics. Fannie Lou Hamer was one of 20 children born to her sharecropping parents. She was also a partially disabled by polio and was very little formal education and had very little formal education. But her spirit gave her something no college degree could provide, the determination to face centuries of Southern white oppression and demand that it ends. And that concludes my piece on Fannie Lou Hamer. And as you can see here, with also, you can see the connection with Zora Neale Hurston. They both had a vision and they both constantly went for their vision as they seen it. You see, as Zora Neale Hurston's mother again said, she told her to jump at the sun. And you could also see that with Fannie Lou Hamer, her still just like leaving the plantation, her last day, that same night, she was determined to go right into that registration office in Mississippi and demand that they allowed her to vote. And you see that determination with her as it carries on later on, even after the house that she was staying at was shot up. You see the courageous acts that she has done in her life, which deals with politics and having more black representation in the Democratic Party in politics, specifically in Mississippi, and her being a part of the movement for equality and change. This is also a person who who just has to visualize. You can't just go in there and just not understand what you're doing. You're going to have a vision. And her vision was having equality and having more representation of her people in politics, in higher positions, and just to have equality again. Thank you.
Fannie Lou Hamer, when you speak of her, I and Zora Neale Hurston, but I just want to highlight Fannie Lou Hamer for a moment. She spoke at a convention where Martin Luther King was invited to speak as well. Now, not to overshadow Martin Luther King Jr. at the time, but everybody was spellbound and waiting to hear her for a person who had grew up as a sharecropper. She had a very elegant way of representing and visually speaking her story. Her story talked about, just as you related to us, how when she decided that she wanted to register to vote, she was asked to leave the same day. They had to leave what they had. They had to leave that plantation with what they had on. And they did. Later on, she gathered a group of other black go register to vote. And as they got on the bus, they rode and they stopped at a restaurant. Some people wanted to go and get something, and some people wanted to use the bathroom. And while they were there, the one group was told that they will not be served. Apparently, the police were called in. As a result, they were all arrested. Particularly, Fannie Lou Hamer was on the bus. She didn't even get off. And they arrested them all. And there were women in the group. And when they got arrested, they were beaten in jail. Fannie Lou Hamer described hearing the screams of her friend in pain. And the woman, her friend who was in pain, said out loud, "I'm going to pray for you."
Right.
And as it continued, they finally came to her and they beat her as well. And during that particular speech, she was so eloquent. Lyndon B. Johnson, the president at the time, had caught wind that she was going to be giving this speech and wanted to downplay it. And he decided to have a press conference at the same time. Well, it backfired because that speech was replayed over and over again so that everybody in the country was able to hear her visualize the spoken word so that people could understand the pain and suffering that black people had to go through, particularly in Mississippi.
Right.
And she really felt that the pain and suffering that blacks had to go through in Mississippi was a reflection of America. She spoke many times about how the red, white, and blue, particularly the red, was of the flag, was drenched with black people's blood. Now, a lot of people didn't want to hear this stuff. They didn't want to hear that. They don't, and to this day, I don't think people still want to hear the truth. But, you know, like I say at the beginning introduction, you know, the truth shines like a diamond. And it will not be denied. I'd like to ask you to interpret some quotes from Fannie Lou Hamer yourself. Now, one of her popular quotes was, "Never forget where we came from. Never to forget where we came from, and always praise the bridges that carried us over. How would you interpret that, Walker?
Okay, so I guess never where you came from, never basically where you fit, never forget where you came from. Yeah, so you don't want to ever forget the people who brought you up and the people who made you, I guess, the person that you are once you move on in life and hopefully become successful. You don't want to forget those people who actually brought you to that position because, you know, they probably sacrificed a lot of things for you to get to that position. And if you leave them straight in the dust, that could backfire it on you. And, you know, you might need them and they won't be at your assistance and you end up having nobody. So you don't ever want to forget people who again, burned down bridges, did everything in their power to get you to the position that they got you in, because that was something that they didn't really have to do and that they sacrificed for you. So again, you don't want to ever forget those type of people.
Well, you actually read one of the quotes that I'm going to ask you to interpret in your own words. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. How would you interpret that?
Yeah. You know, I heard actually this quote a lot throughout my life, between my mother and just other people who say this quote as well, you know. And you're just tired of always being discriminated against, always being hated, just again, especially during her time period, they were just tired of always this hate that was towards African Americans during the time, which they didn't deserve, because is no reason to have hate. We didn't do anything towards your people. All we want is for us to be equal to y'all in this country, and just to have this hatred that you have against us, we're just sick and tired of it. We're tired of dealing with it because we've been trying to fight this for years, years upon years, and it's still the same exact result. And I guess that's where her quote was coming from during that time.
Well, I'm not finished. You can pray until you faint, but unless you get up and try to do something, God is not going to put it in your lap.
Yeah, that's true. You could, you know, it's always good if you're religious to pray to your God. Hopefully but you could pray to him, but if you just continue just to feel bad for yourself or just ask him of why this happened to me and please help me, and you do nothing about it, of course is going to happen. Nothing's just going to magically appear to you if you do absolutely nothing about it. You could also relate that to a lot of people probably today. You know, they'll ask why I'm not getting this result or something, and why this is happening. But are you really doing something about it to fix it? You got to ask yourself that question, you know. You can't just make people feel bad for you, because people are not, especially if you're not doing anything about it. So that's my interpretation.
Nobody's free until everybody's free.
Okay, so yeah, this is another good quote. Nobody's free until everybody's free. I guess what that can mean is, you know, we all are human, of course. At the end of the day, doesn't matter what color our skin or what we look like. We're all technically human, and we all are the same species. So nobody, no certain people could just, I guess, be free and everything go right for them, and just for them to, I guess, just to neglect and just not know about another type of people's hurt. And what I'm saying is that's possible, but of course you're going to constantly hear about it if you're not doing anything about it. So we're all human again, like I said, and if you see another person's struggles and you're just constantly ignoring it because you're probably doing well, it's going to come backfire on you when you probably need help, when you need something later in life. And you're going to constantly keep hearing about it until you actually get tired of it and actually are going to do something about it. So I guess as a whole community, as a whole people, we are all people, and a certain amount of us can't be free to anything until all of us feel free, if that makes sense.
And,
yeah, well, this is your self-expression. And it's encouraged me, motivated me to add, just to say,
the change that you bind me with, you are also bound to. The hatred that you have for me will destroy you. So no one's free unless we're all free. And that would be my interpretation and my self-expression of that particular quote from her. I have one last one for you, okay? And it's this. We have to build our own power. We have to win every single political office we can where we have a majority of black people.
Yeah, so again, this is something that's related to her time period and her beliefs of, you know, the only way we're going to get representation and get people to understand our problems is if our people who understand our problems is in those type of positions. So to explain more on that, having more representation of a certain type of people, whether it even be black, Hispanic, any type of people that lives in the country, having their type of people who understand what they are going through, those people who have those positions in power are going to take that into account and actually want to help their people and encourage other cultures and other races that this is what our problems are and this is what we go through. And this is how we could make it so that all people could be satisfied and feel comfortable. So I guess what she was trying to say is we're going to have as many African Americans winning these elections as possible so that they could present these problems to their white counterparts in politics so that our problems could hopefully be noticed and be taken serious.
I'm going to jump in here with 90 seconds left and say job well done. And when I hear that particular quote, it makes me think of the representation on a local level that can make and promote change. You see, many people go into particular positions that they end up in, and they bring their personal prejudices and biases. And when they don't understand the perspective of African-American people and the pain and suffering of over 400 years, then it's so easy for them to diminish and be able to right a wrong that has been done over and over on a group of people, and that people are African-Americans in this country. Val, I know you're on the line. I would like for you to make a comment before Walter closes us out.
Absolutely. Never to forget where we came from and always praise the bridges that carried us over.
And on that note, I would say there's just too much pain and suffering that has gone on, and people need to get out and vote. Walter, close the show.
Yeah, again, a very good show today. I hope the people out there listening hopefully learn something about these people and learn something to inform yourself, and you'll go and continue to inform yourself on these people and these ideas, ideologies that we present in today's show and in other shows. And again, Thank you, everybody, for listening to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations, also known as Quest Youth Radio. We also have a show, again, Saturday morning, 8 o'clock. Make sure you tune into that show as well, which is an hour long, which means it's even more information to be presented. And, again, to close us out, Quest Youth Radio is
the best youth radio.
Okay, once again, thank you for joining us. A different perspective of our struggle and struggles that we have ahead of us. Once again, thank you and good night. Peace. And no doubt, Walter Pierce, our student host, has done an excellent job without a doubt. Peace.
Excellent job, Walter.